You cannot be serious! That ball was on the line!
And ladies and gentlemen, Elvis has just left the building.
Konnichiwa, this is Yu Vocal.
How do? This is Matt Cohen.
Welcome to Big Lens Fat Center, where we demystify the world of sports photography, where Matt decides that he's not Jewish anymore. Are you like renouncing your Jewishness now? Is that what it is?
I've converted. Yeah, I've converted to being a cowboy.
Oh, God. Now, he's going to be a Jewish cowboy later on, guys, so he'll go back to Shalom in the next podcast.
Here at News, both Ryu and I will tell you our best and worst shoot of the previous month, and we talk about ourselves, because Ryu is an egomaniac.
And indeed I am. Since I am, I'm going to start with me, because I'm. It's probably quite apt that I start with me, because I'm doing something outside of my own country, which is France. I'm in Japan. And I'm in the northeast region of Japan where the tsunami hit. And I've decided to do a series of portraits of children over here between the ages of about 7 to 18. And yeah, it's been very interesting. If you want to see like what I've actually shot so far, not the children's portraits, because that's going to be shot this weekend, which is probably going to be, well, you've probably passed that weekend once you listen to this podcast, but it will be the 4th and the 5th of January. I don't know, February. So my best and worst is that best is that it's very interesting to be shooting a disaster-struck area like this. Because you get to meet people that will tell you stories about what happened to them and you'll get to shoot them. And at the same time, the worst is that I was just telling Matt that the place I'm actually staying, I'm actually working part-time as a volunteer for this temporary school. It's the toilet is a hole in the, not in the wall, but in the ground. So as Matt alluded to, it's a Chinese version toilet. So, you know, there's no water, just shit and piss in it. It's cold, it's crazy cold. You get up in the morning because you're too cold. You can see your breath, like, really solid in the air in the morning. And, yeah, it sucks, you know. But, c'est la vie, that's how it goes, and I'm enjoying it. And hopefully, I would have actually shot some sports here as well. But we'll see how it goes today. And you?
Yeah, I didn't really have any worst shoots. I shot a couple Sharks hockey games that nothing really great happened, and they were kind of boring, but nothing really bad happened. My best shoot of the month by far, it's really funny because it's not even a real event. I went up to Lincoln, California, which is about 2 hours away from me. It's a little bit north of Sacramento, and just shot some bull riding practice. These are young kids, high school, some of them young high school, getting on young bulls who some of them have never bucked before. So it was kind of unpredictable. It was weird. It was in a really dark little pavilion and none of the normal things that you would see at a rodeo. It's basically the most basic form of rodeo that you can get, just, you know, a man and a bull. And it was great. They let me do whatever I wanted and asked me to come back. And it's things like that that kind of calls back to what I was saying in a blog post a while back. It doesn't always have to be MLB or NASCAR or something like that. It doesn't even have to be organized. You know, you can get access to things like this. And if you're really lucky, be able to try some things that you've never done before, because you can't get that kind of access at big time events. So yeah, it's really good to just shoot and try things and fail and figure it out and try them again. And so yeah, that was definitely my best shoot of the month.
Great. So it's like minor league for bull riding, huh?
Not even, I mean, there are actual minor leagues, but this wasn't even that. This was just straight up practice. Like, there wasn't even scoring. There wasn't a scoreboard, there wasn't a clock. I mean, it was just, you know, just guys getting on bulls. So pretty cool.
excellent stuff, Matt. Yeah, but in any case, we will see you in the next section because, you know, Matt has to go to a Sharks game very soon.
We introduce is a section where we present a sports photographer or a person related to the sports photography business. Ryu is on assignment and unavailable to do the interview, so I'm going to do it myself. And today we have Jed Jacobson, who, like myself, lives in the Bay Area. Jed, why don't you tell us what your background is in photography and what you're working on these days?
Yeah, hi, Matt. Thanks for having me. Sure. Yeah, I actually live in the Bay Area in the East Bay in Berkeley, and I'm from here. I went to all the public schools here and started my photography here as well, probably at Berkeley High is when I started getting serious with it. And at that time, also hooked up with United Press International, UPI, which is still around, and was, but they were sort of more of a force in the photography field, like along the lines of, say, like AP is today, or say Reuters. So I actually kind of was experienced to shooting sport back then when I was in high school, which was I graduated in 91. So 4 years before that, I did a lot of shooting in the Bay Area of the 49ers and the A's and the Giants, who were all pretty good at that time.
You were shooting for the UPI when you were still in high school?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. I sort of went in, kept during my junior year. I was looking for just a summer internship, and I called up AP, and I called up Reuters, the San Francisco bureaus, kind of just told them who I was and what I was looking to do, and AP was like, sorry, don't have anything Reuters, nothing. And then UPI, Terry Schmidt, who I know you've seen out there too, Matt. Yeah. And he was like, yeah, sure, kid, come on down. And basically taught me how to roll film onto steel reels and make color prints and just learning how to transmit on the wire back then, which was by making prints and typing up captions on a typewriter and peeling off the stickers and putting on the print and putting it into a drum transmitter, which spun like each did a cyan, a magenta, and a yellow, and it spun maybe 5 minutes per color, and that came out a color picture on the other end. Which is kind of crazy because it's not that long ago.
Right.
that happened, excuse me. And so, yeah, that was my first experience to like transmitting on deadline, and I did a lot of processing film back then too for their clients.
Okay.
And then I went to Syracuse University after high school and started the photography program there. I did that for 2 years, and then at that same time got an internship at All Sport Photography.
Yeah.
Which later became a part of Getty. But back then, it was one of the only just purely sports photography agencies out there. So I had Terry had a connection there with this woman, Holly Stein, who was in charge of hiring back then. So I got to show my portfolio to her early on, and I had a pretty good portfolio of just professional sports for someone who was pretty young, so I kind of impressed them, I guess, early on, and did my summer internships at AllSport in between my college at Syracuse. And then actually in Syracuse, I switched to a psychology degree after my sophomore year.
With all that experience?
Yeah. I mean, I was planning on just leaving college, but my parents kind of insisted on me staying, yeah. which was a good idea in the end. So that's what I did. Okay. And when I graduated in 95 mm-hmm. from Syracuse, I started at AllSport.
Okay.
And then worked at AllSport for till I guess 99 when they were bought by Getty. And then I worked for Getty since 2010. And now I'm freelance for the last couple of years.
Who are you shooting for now?
Well, I have a lot of clients. Being a freelancer, I do stuff for Sports Illustrated, New York Times, AP, Getty. I do some commercial stuff as well for various people. Being a freelancer now, no client is off limits.
Yeah, so why don't you tell us a little bit about what you're thinking? You know, you get an assignment from the New York Times, or you get an assignment from SI, or let's stick to editorial for the moment.
Mm-hmm.
What are the different things that go through your mind when you get a call from the Times, or when you get a call from SI or AP or something like that? Like, uh-huh. Kind of run us through the differences between those.
Well, the good thing about the editors at, say, like the New York Times and Sports Illustrated is they usually have a pretty clear idea of what they want to see. So at a particular game, they'll give you pretty good direction on at least not who to shoot, at just a certain maybe a type of feel that they want from the pictures too, which is nice. So that kind of gives you some direction going into it about how you're going to approach a game. Like, for example, I did the Giants 49ers NFC Championship game for the New York Times. Mm-hmm. And the editor, Brad Smith, who's wonderful, you know, wanted me to kind of like stick back and shoot some of the defense, because the defense was going to be a story of the game potentially, because both of the defenses were pretty strong. So we wanted to illustrate that somehow. And we thought kind of shooting behind the line, maybe even when it gets close down to the end zone, trying to emphasize the defense, you know, would be one way of approaching the game, which wouldn't normally be where I would be shooting from during the game. So it was nice to, you know, to have someone on the other end knowing what they wanted to see and then trying to go ahead and capture that.
Yeah,
I'd say I get similar direction, even probably more specifically from Sports Illustrated when I do something. Usually it's like one or two players they're focusing on sometimes even. So then you're often shooting just that player and maybe even ignoring the action in the game, because that's not important to whatever story they're working on. So it really varies on who the client is, what story they're working on, and then I take that information and, you know, plan the game out from there.
So let's say you took an assignment for SI and they're doing a feature on a player, so your responsibility is for that player, and it's, let's say it's football, so that player is only going to be on the field for, you know, half the game, a third of the game, or something like that. What are you doing for the rest of the time?
Well, you're either, if the player is, say, on the bench, then you're trying to get some pictures of him on the bench. You know, the player is always somewhere, and oftentimes if they have their helmet off, there's a request for, you know, shots where you can see their face, and in football, you can't see their face because obviously they have the helmet on. So you're always doing something, and if truly there's just a guy just sitting there and nothing happening, there's usually a couple other players or whatnot that are worth shooting, or there's some story on. And also, in any situation, any good picture, the editor is going to want. So, I mean, they could be, say, doing a story on Patrick Willis, but I get a great touchdown picture that could be used as a double chunk in the magazine. That's certainly, I'm not going to just ignore that. But my focus will be on covering the story for where the editor has, you know, told me whatever the plan is for the story. So.
Right. And then can you kind of contrast that with what it would be like to shoot on a freelance assignment for Getty or AP?
Uh-huh. Yeah, definitely. It's, you know, for, say, doing an editorial job for Getty, you know, they want a wide variety of storytelling pictures, stock type pictures of, say, the starting quarterback and the star players. So you have to come back with those images and more of, and oftentimes like wide views of the stadium. So there's more of a general coverage storytelling type pictures that you're coming back with, say, doing an editorial job for Getty. So that's, and there's usually little direction in terms of, like, it's, you know, that's what's expected of you. That it's that general, pretty much, like, make good pictures of just storytelling part of the game, and also they want creative and pretty pictures as well. So,
Yeah, so that's something that we push quite a bit here. I don't know if people are getting sick of us talking about it yet or not, but talk to us about your creative process. So when you're, you know, there's a big play, you're going to be, you know, down there with your, you know, your big lens getting, you know, getting ready for what's going to happen on that play. But let's just say it's, you know, it's a blowout or, you know, you see some nice light coming in. Like, what are you thinking about and how do you prioritize the game action versus getting more creative?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm always trying to look for nice light and working with the light. And I think regardless of the situation in the game, especially if it's a blowout and it's really nice light, then that's almost a great time to play around and do something different, whether it means like going up into the stands and shooting the shadows on the field, which I like to do and a lot of photographers like to do. And I think that's what I try to do when I shoot, is try to come back with something different that not everybody else has. And oftentimes working with the light and knowing what it's going to do is a good way of doing that. Whether it's shooting backlit, say at a football game when the stands go black and, you know, you can see the sweat beads coming off a certain guy when it's backlit, you know, those types of pictures I'm definitely looking for. And also having clean backgrounds, which is, you know, basic just photography lessons, but all very important, I think, for coming back with impactful sports pictures as well.
What sports do you like shooting better than others, and what sports do you like shooting less than others?
I like shooting a good variety of sports. There isn't one sport that I just like to be shooting, but I do like shooting baseball. I like shooting the, you know, the major American sports, really, to be honest. Like baseball, football, basketball, I really enjoy. But also winter sports, I like doing, and then Olympic sports too. Those are all, I'd say, the main things that I like to shoot, and also enough to keep me busy too.
Okay, interesting.
And I don't do a lot of golf. I do some golf or motor racing. I do that, you know, mostly if it's in the Bay Area.
Right.
But I don't emphasize. There's a lot of guys who specialize in that and whatnot. So.
Yeah, Getty like has their own team that comes in to shoot up at Sonoma, especially for the bigger races.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly.
So I've seen some of your boxing pictures. Not a lot of guys get to shoot boxing. Can you talk to us about that a little bit?
Yeah, I forgot to mention boxing just because I haven't done it in a while because there hasn't been a whole lot to shoot these days in terms of big fights. But I love shooting boxing. It's one of the few sports that you're actually one of the closest people to the action physically. So that's pretty exciting in itself. And it also allows you photographically to, you know, really get some impactful pictures. Some of the problems with shooting boxing are backgrounds can get pretty messy and is often very tight on the rope in the ring. And you're pretty much smashed up against two other photographers or the ring judge at one moment or another. So it's not the most comfortable of shooting situations, but there are also very few places that are as exciting, and the energy of a big fight is pretty fun. You can make some great pictures too, because of just the action, and you know, there's no helmets. It's all just like kind of right there for you, and it's also one of the more challenging sports to shoot, just because of the speed of the punches being thrown and trying to anticipate what might happen and whatnot. But I love shooting boxing. Excuse me. I wish there were more fights to shoot that were worthwhile.
Yeah, boxing doesn't seem to be in very good shape, but MMA does. Have you been shooting any of that?
I have, yeah. I have been doing some UFC. I do that through Getty and Zuffa, which is the UFC brand.
Okay.
So, yeah, I've done, I think, 3 UFC fights. And that's been a lot of fun, actually. It's kind of, you know, at first I was a little skeptical of it, but yeah, I've really enjoyed shooting it. It's the action's pretty good, and the athletes are definitely, you can't deny the skill of some of these guys. So that's been a nice change and something different. And it's fun shooting it for the UFC too, because you have really good access. You shoot on like the, you have a little pedestal on the one of the corners of the octagon.
So. Right. Yeah. And otherwise, it's.
Otherwise, you're shooting through the cage, yeah, and yeah, all that. It's like an octagon. With, yeah, fence cage.
I've had to do that, and it's, yeah, not really a whole lot of fun.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't look like it, but. The angle's not the best from shooting up there, but you certainly can't beat the access or the proximity to the action.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was fun. I shot a few of those fights this year, or in the past year, which was good.
Yeah. So a question we've been asking recently is, so what's something now that you kind of take for granted that you had no idea of when you started, and then when you figured it out, it was like an aha kind of moment.
In terms of anything,
it could be, you know, like your gear, figuring out how to use it, figuring out how to do something differently, or
I feel like I'm still figuring all that stuff out. there's, I have constant moments like that. Let me think. I don't know. I guess it really came, I'd have to say, more like with what works with photography and what doesn't. And in terms of just like the real basic things, like I sort of already talked about, like with background and light, when you have certain factors like that, that work, then you know, if you look at your portfolio or whatever and you see what works, it's usually those factors are taken into account. So I don't know. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it doesn't have to be just that. It can be like, you know, figuring out how to deal with people, or, you know, figuring out how to get clients or something like that. Like, it, something that we're constantly seeing, and it, I guess the further you get away from being new at it, the harder it is to really explain certain things to people who don't know yet, because you figured them out so long ago that, you know, you forget what it was like to, before you figured that out, you know, out the struggle of it seems so long ago that you remember why you were struggling with it in the first place.
Well, I'd say really being a good person and being who you are. I mean, that may be kind of general, but I think that has gone a long way for me. And, you know, just to not kind of put on airs or whatever when you're dealing with people and just kind of be a good human being, I feel like that's gone a long way in my business.
Because it's so rare.
And clients want to work with people. There's plenty of good photographers out there, yeah, but they also want to work with people who they can deal with, and who their clients can deal with. And I think, you know, that comes with experience. And after a while, I think that goes a long way. And, you know, I know that people appreciate that. So, and because there's people definitely out there who I know have kind of done wrong by themselves by the way they act. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've talked about that as well, where, you know, there's an etiquette to shooting. You stay out of other people's way and, you know, share the spots and,
absolutely,
you know, move around. And, you know, that's something that I try to do when I'm out there. Like, there are times when you have to pass something up because to get it would be to screw over a whole bunch of other people. And you just don't want to be that person. You want to be the person who steps out on a touchdown celebration and blocks 15 people, you know, because you thought you needed that picture more than they did, or you didn't think about them, or, you know.
Yeah. I think that's a really important point, because more people should heed that, because it's,
yeah, I mean, you're just going to see the same people over and over again. And, you know, sometimes you will need that. Like, if you were out there and you were there to shoot, say, one of the Giants receivers at that game, you know, and you needed, if he was going to catch a touchdown pass and celebrate or something, you needed that. And, you know, if you had been discourteous to someone before or blocked their shot or something, then you're increasing the chances that you're going to get blocked or that you're not going to be able to get the picture. So, you know, I just think that I mean, it's awareness of what's going on around you and that there are other people who have a job to do as well. So that's good. It's good to hear that from other people, and especially people who have reached the places that you've reached. But let's talk about what's something crazy that has happened to you during a shoot, like something that, you know, like a story that gets told for years, or anything out of the ordinary that's happened.
I remember one story was, I think it was the 2002 NBA All-Star Game. And really a picture does it more justice, but it was a pretty good actual game, and it was Michael Jordan's last All-Star game, and it went into overtime, and then it went into double overtime, and to get it into double overtime, he actually hit a shot, and I'm shooting on the baseline, and hit the shot to put the game into double overtime, and landed like right on my ankle, and it hurt pretty bad, actually. So the entire place is going crazy because Jordan just hit the shot to go to double overtime, and I'm like trying to push his leg off my leg, kind of screaming in pain. But there is like this great AP still photo from the other side of the court of Jordan with his fist pumping. They cropped it, so it's basically just Jordan pumping his fist, my face in agony as I'm pushing his leg off mine, and then Bill Walton celebrating in the back, who was sitting in the front row. So it's just a great. And then I got like a call from my mom the next morning. I was still in Atlanta because it was on the front page of the Chronicle, San Francisco Chronicle. Just like a picture on the bottom, and you know, just me, and as you can see my face, and you can see Jordan, and then Walton just like, "Are you okay?" Like, so that was pretty funny to get stepped on by Michael Jordan.
Yeah, that's great. I did not know that story. Yeah, that's pretty funny. Okay, so yeah, and just finally, I guess, what, considering the audience that we have, which is people who are either just getting into this or trying to take the next step up, what would, in general, what would be your advice to somebody who's in that position right now?
Wow. I think just, you know, do it, keep on doing it if you love to do it, and don't expect to get a lot of money doing it. I think the business is ever changing, and I think it's hard to predict what it's going to be like, say, in 5 years. People keep talking video and whatnot, but I firmly believe that the medium is different, and the way of thinking, well, maybe similar. I still think there's going to be a market for still photograph for a while. So look at as much work as you can. I remember when I was starting out looking at, you know, I remember looping a lot of slides of people who I liked back in the day, and even now it's so much easier with the internet, being able to look at people's work that you admire. I think that's a really good way of learning, and really not being afraid to try something different, and trying to distinguish yourself from everyone else, and just letting your whatever you really like to do try to come out in your photography.
So where would you suggest people go to look at, like, we send them to the Getty archive, and we send them to obviously all the people that we interview here, and we do Twitter links to other people's work that we like, but, so first of all, where would you send them in a general sense? And then do you have, specific photographers that you think that people should look up to, you know, to kind of get an idea as to who's doing great work right now?
I don't have a set pattern for studying photographers. It's just it's sort of kind of happenstance, like the way that you said, like on Twitter. I go to Twitter a lot, and A Photo Editor is a great website that I read all the time, and they have a lot of good links to photographers who are doing different work, and sort of the usual areas like PDN and whatnot, looking at that. And you just there's certain websites like for commercially, like Ads of the World, you like reading, and then you see, you can check out who the photographers are, or checking out Le Book, which is great. You know, they have a lot of different links. And another good way is looking at like photographer representation, like agents or whatnot, and seeing who those photographers are. There's usually lists. There are also always lists of whoever the agent is of their photographers, and checking out their work. That's a great way of, you know, seeing people's sites and whatnot.
Great. Okay. Well, thank you very much. We appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah. Good to talk to you. Great.
In Masterclass, we pick a topic in sports photography and we discuss it front and back.
And this month, we talk about damage control. So when things are not going your way, you have to do something to right the ship and kind of compensate for your bad luck and compensate for your mistakes and compensate for the crappy situation that you are in terms of your shooting situation. So I'm just going to say like what happened to me recently. A guy missed a shot of celebration after a goal late in the game. I already actually got the celebration, but this would have been better because it was a bit more dynamic celebration and people were coming, not the people, but the players were going towards the fans and celebrating together, but I screwed it up. So after that, I told myself, well, it's highly unlikely they're going to score a fourth goal. So I'm going to just concentrate on the action that's on the pitch. Because I think if I did try to, you know, talk myself into like, okay, I'm just going to wait for the fourth goal to happen, and then I'll be able to get the celebration shots, and then everyone's going to be happy and all is well. Because then I really wouldn't be concentrating on what's happening on the pitch, because I would be able to actually take, you know, interesting action shots had I been concentrating on that rather than hoping that the fourth goal will be scored. So if you get into that kind of a situation where you missed something, don't get yourself too caught up in it. You kind of have to kind of put your mindset as like a goalkeeper in soccer or football, whatever you should call it. You get scored. I mean, it's going to happen. You know, shit happens in life and shit happens in sports photography. Make sure you don't dwell on it more than you have to. You probably got maybe, I don't know, 20 seconds to dwell on it and say, you know what? You didn't do a good job. That's it. Fine. And if it's something like a celebration, if that was the only opportunity for you to get the celebration, then you're a bit screwed. So there's nothing else you can do about it. Concentrate on what's happening on the pitch. Maybe try to get emotional shots, hoping that would then kind of be interpreted as celebrations. Or if you're, you know, shooting for a team that's losing, then you can shoot stuff on the pitch that might be construed as a disappointment, because you cannot get the same shot over. You can't just tell the guys, say, hey, come and celebrate over here again. You can't do that. Also, managers as well, like how they're reacting to the what's going on the pitch. Sometimes they get very, very emotional, and depending on who the manager is, they will give you a lot more emotion that might kind of sort of equate to celebration or being scored on and things like that. So my tip on this is that just forget it and kind of go with the flow and try to do as much as you can whilst you're at it.
I had two examples of shoots that went kind of sideways last month. I've talked about them a little bit on the last podcast, but this is kind of a different angle on that. The first one was the Steelers 49ers Monday night game in December. And it was kind of a mess. Monday night football is a mess in general because it's the only game going on. So the network brings all of their cameras. So they have more angles. More angles means more cameras and more camera crews. So there's the cameraman, the sound guy, and the people that pull the cables. Sidelines were a mess. It was very difficult to get where you needed to be on the sideline. And to top it all off, there were two lengthy blackouts, like where the stadium just went completely dark because of a transformer problem. So the game was really disjointed.
Like Decepticons and Autobots?
I don't know what that is.
Oh, no, really?
No. Anyway.
Shut up. You're joking, right?
I don't know what that is.
You're just a Transformers. Oh,
okay. Yeah, I didn't see that.
Okay. Okay, go on.
Ryu's disappointment is complete.
Oh, Jesus. All
right. There were two blackouts at the stadium, and one was right before the game, and then one was in the middle of the first half. So there wasn't really any flow to the game. There weren't any really good plays. It was a weird, very weird game, and people were kind of bracing for when the next blackout was going to happen. So it just, the shoot was not going my way. Usually in a football game, I'll have, you know, I could file after the first quarter and have basically everything except for any kind of major plays that happen. Like I would be able to get the quarterback dropping back and the running back running with the ball and, you know, a big tackle or something like that and really have the game covered and then just be able to sit on big plays for the rest of the time. Just wasn't happening in this game. And it, you know, because the sidelines were so caked, I wasn't really confident that I was going to, you know, be able to put it all together. So I used a lot of the timeouts and injuries and part of the blackouts to shoot portraits and get the guys warming up after the blackout when the lights went back on. Headshots are, you know, if somebody gets traded, they're often going to run a headshot, especially if the player has his helmet off, over a game action picture where you can barely tell who the player is. So I just said, you know what, I'm going to make something out of this game. There was some, you know, the lighting with the light coming back on was more interesting than you would see normally. So I just sat on the sideline and made portraits, headshots, reaction shots, coaches yelling at the players, players talking to each other. And that's really all I got from that game. It was not a good game. There were not a lot of great plays. But I ended up with, you know, 60 or 70 actual pictures from that game that could run during the off season when people get traded, free agency, retirement, things like that. So sometimes you're not going to get the action that you're looking for, but if you're there on assignment, you're going to need something. And if you're there freelancing it, you're going to need some pictures to sell later on. You know, sideline pictures are still sports pictures. So, take advantage of the fact that you're there and get the pictures you can get. And then the other one is more of an access issue. And I've kind of been over this on the blog, but at the National Finals Rodeo, I couldn't be where I wanted to be. And the place where they told me to be wasn't going to work, especially not over 10 days. So, you know, I bent the rules a little bit. I went to places where I was sure I wasn't blocking anyone's point of view, paying fans, other photographers, and just kept moving so that, you know, somebody couldn't say, oh, well, I've seen this guy here, so let's get him out of here. I just, you know, would shoot one event and then move on. You got to make the best of it. And if somebody says you need to stand over here and you think that you can move somewhere else and get the pictures you need without getting kicked out or without getting anybody upset, then if that's your job, then you need to do that. And I'll add one kind of general thing to this. Not everybody who listens to this is going to be on an assignment with an editor or sitting at a desk waiting for the pictures to come in. But if that's something that you envision for yourself down the road, then treat your assignments, the things that you shoot, as if you are on assignment and there is somebody waiting for those pictures. And if a game's going sideways, you have the choice, like, ah, well, you know, nobody's paying me to be here. I don't need these pictures and it's not going my way, so I'm just going to bail. Or you could take it as a real life exercise and say, I'm going to pretend that somebody's waiting for these pictures and I'm going to shoot the rest of this game out as if there is, and then I'm going to make something of it. So that would be my advice.
And I think it happens quite a lot for me because I do shoot matches that I'm not guaranteed to get anything out of. But I do, like Matt said, I do tend to concentrate on the fact that there is a possibility, if I get a good shot, there's a possibility that they will buy these shots. And because it is very easy to say, if the match is quite boring, it's very easy to say, you know what, screw this, I'm just going to coast through, or maybe I'll just even like leave, you know, three quarters of the match, that I'm just going to go home and beat the traffic and go home, you know. But you you should kind of get used to the fact that you're going to be on a deadline if you do this professionally. And if you, especially in most cases, you will be working for an agency or a newspaper. Maybe a newspaper won't be there when you're old enough to be doing this for work. But agencies do require you to send stuff instantaneously and with the quality that they're used to having. So treating it like it's the real thing. You can send it to your mom if you want the picture and say, "Hey, mom, look at these shots that I actually got from this match, and it happened only 30 seconds ago." It'll be good. Putting captions, things like that. But yeah, just one thing you really should not forget is, like I said before, just keep yourself very, very calm, because you will screw up here and there. One other example that happens quite a lot is that I'll miss the goal. And, you know, like the goal meaning the moment the ball is hit by the player, and then, you know, everyone goes crazy. But the actual action of getting a goal. So what you have to do is get the celebration, because that's the least you can do, and it's much easier than getting a goal. Vice versa. You know, I've been times that I've actually got the goal, and then, you know, it's like, I'm sure, Matt, in your case, like, you get the touchdown and you didn't get the celebration, or you didn't get a touchdown and you got the celebration, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm. So those are things.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, Ryu just said that, you know, take 20 seconds and think about it and then get back in the game. But sometimes you don't even have that. Like, you really need to critique yourself when there's nothing going on, not when there could be something going on. There have definitely been times where I've gotten blocked by a referee on a touchdown in American football, but then the player ran directly at me. And if I wasn't ready for that, if I was, you know, sitting on my 400, you know, thinking that I had the touchdown, and then the referee steps in the way and it's blown and I get pissed about it, then...
Which happens a lot,
you know,
right?
And if I... Yeah, it does. I mean, when there's seven referees on the field, there's a good chance the ref is going to block you at least.
The fact you get pissed off about it.
I do get pissed off when I'm shooting. Hence, angry Matt. there's a lot of referees on the field. You're going to get blocked. But, you know, if I just sat there and said, "Wow, I'm really pissed about this. The ref just cost me a picture of a touchdown." But then I wasn't switching up to a wider lens, and the player who scored the touchdown is running directly at me. If I didn't make that, then I'm compounding my original mistake by not being prepared for what came after it. So that would be, you know, another bit of my advice is, you know, you can sulk when you look at your pictures after the game or at halftime or, you know, whenever, but while you're there shooting, keep your head up and keep looking around and figure out, what do I think is going to happen next and where do I want to be for that? So even 20 seconds can cost you a celebration or a coach throwing a clipboard down, or, you know, if you miss a touchdown, you can certainly turn around and shoot the sideline and see, you know, either the whole sideline jumping up and down, or, you know, a coach ripping off his headphones or somebody throwing their helmet down or something like that. There's always going to be something going on. Don't let the fact that you missed the original shot keep you from getting what happens after that.
So the motto of this entire segment is that shoot now and sulk later, because you have plenty of time when you upload all the photos into your computer and say, "Oh my God, what kind of an idiot am I for actually missing all these shots?" So yeah, you know, it's one of those things that it's. I don't know anyone that gets all the shots they need all the time. Me sometimes, yes, but, you know, Matt, I mean, he's got his problem. So, you know, don't feel bad about it. It does happen. But that's not really an excuse for you to not miss these shots, because he shouldn't be anyway. If you're in the right position, if nothing is blocking your way, you should be able to get these shots. But if you don't, you know, kind of move on. But just and get other shots that you can get, and you'll be a better photographer then, hopefully.
You Win is part of the show where you, the listeners, participate in a monthly themed competition. The top three photos will be presented on our site. To participate, go to our Flickr group, Big Lens Fast Shutter, and post your picture on the themed competition topic. Just to kind of like go be a bit, you know, we're going to talk really a bit about this competition itself. We are trying desperately here to make you realize that sports photography isn't just action. And we're going to pound it into your head for here till eternity if it needs to be. So part of this, like the whole face thing, is that it's very important to capture faces and reactions and emotions of athletes in a sporting competition because it tells a story and it should tell a story. Same thing about the parts themed competition last month as well, where, you know, it's about parts of body and not necessarily the whole, because everyone thinks that it's important to capture the entire, you know, well, that thing, entire body. And it's not. You can just take parts and make, you know, it's all about telling a story within the picture, and don't really get hung up on taking action shots, because that's not everything.
If you're looking to win, look back at the pictures that we've taken. Scratch that. Look back at the pictures we've chosen as first, second, and third, month after month after month after month. It has to be a really, really special picture for it to be a straight up sports action picture to win any of these contests. You can look at them, go back and look at them. It's just not what we're looking for. You can continue entering them if you want, and if they're really exceptional, then, you know, they're going to have a good chance. But in general, that's sports action is sports action. What we're looking for is do something different, figure it out, show us something we've never seen before, challenge yourself, experiment. But these straight up sports action pictures that could be in freeze, or they could be in faces, or they could be in parts, or, you know, they can just apply to anyone. To use one of your shoots to only try to get a picture to put in the contest. I just can't keep looking at the same picture that could be, and I think one of them this month was in a previous one. Don't do that. If it fits in one, use it in that one. If it fits in a different one, use it in that one. But don't just keep putting the same picture in, or taking the same pictures and putting them in.
Figure
it out. Do better.
You know, but, you know, honestly, keep on entering. We like to have entries, and we will put them into training ground if we don't think it's got any chance of winning the competition. So, saying that, what is your third place photo for this month's competition?
Mine is by Kenneth Armstrong. It's the goalie looking around.
No, really? Yeah. Damn you. That's third place as well for me. Okay,
yeah.
Go ahead.
This just what we were just talking about. It's not an action picture, although there is very likely action going on. But instead of shooting straight up action and putting it in because you can just happen to see somebody's face, this is an important, the goalie has to be watching the puck all the time no matter where it goes, but he still needs to be in front of the net so he can't come out. So this is about as far, you know, out of the net that he can come to look for where the puck is, and you're getting his eyes. They're, you know, there's a little bit of luck involved that both of the irises and the pupils of his eyes are visible through the cage. You know, but that said, he's nailed the focus. He's nailed the composition. Even the background works. This is a nice picture, and it's exactly what we were looking for in a competition called Faces.
Yeah, Matt basically said everything. I love the composition of this whole thing, and I just love the fact that it's only his eyes and you can't see his nose or his mouth, and it's great. It's very charming, you know, it's kind of in a moment. I think it's a great photo.
These are the things that happen during sporting events. Look for them. Take your eye off the ball. You're not playing. If the ball goes whizzing by you or the puck goes whizzing by you and you miss it, it doesn't matter because it's not your job to catch the puck or to have a slap shot or whatever. It's your job to see moments like this and make pictures out of them. And that's what Kenneth has done here. So good picture.
No, it's really great. Number two.
Your turn for number two.
Oh, really? Are we alternating? Yeah. Okay. Mine is by Danny Zelk, and it was taken in Belgium. It's a photo of a biker with mud all over, like caked all over his face. He actually has done a series of these photos, and this was the best one that I saw because of the eyes that it, you know, it tells you something about the photo. It's very important with something like this that he's chosen to use a very shallow depth of focus. So everything, you know, from eye level, I think it's actually focused more on the nose. But in any case, you know, I think it had enough depth to actually like, get the eyes as well. And I think it's just it's a beautiful photo, you know, and this guy's been riding for a while and he's cut shit all over his face. And I don't know. It's. I just thought it was, you know, it was fitting that it was a bike picture, and that was it. You know, this was my favorite from the four to second.
Yeah, place. This was actually my number one. Again, what we were just saying about the previous picture, this happens during sporting events. So, Danny shot the whole race, and I'm sure has pictures of mountain bikes going through puddles and mud bogs and whatever, and maybe he has somebody flipped over, but he stayed around after the race was over and made this picture, which tells the whole story of the race. Like, you don't need to see tires kicking up mud to make it a picture. You can see it. It's literally all over his face. The theme for this month was faces. He has the whole race in somebody's face. You know, that's number one.
Well
number
put, one well put, Matt yeah. Colwin. So basically, my number one is... Oh, no, you can go.
Yeah, my number one is the wrestling picture Chokehold by Tomao.
Why is it that... Oh, really? Yeah. Tomao? Yeah. So it's the, I have a different one. I have a wrestling one, but it's not that one.
Yeah, by Tomao. So it's like a... It's literally, it's a chokehold. So this... This is an example of a sports action picture that fits the theme and is a good picture. You know, you have the forearm and elbow around his neck, and his face is literally red from exertion and from being choked. Great expression on the face. You have the cheerleaders in the background to give it like a little bit of depth. Yeah, so this is my number two. Well, it's my number two because the mud is the number one.
So my number one is this black and white photo by Chris Bunda Photography. Bunda or Bunda. And I don't know why it was. Well, I actually do know. It's the black kid who's pinned down by the white kid. And I like the whole color thing as well because black kid is wearing black and white kid is wearing white. But the great thing is that black kid's expression of, like, he's, I don't know what he's, because he should be struggling at that point, but he's just got this really, I don't know, like, emotionless face in a moment where he probably should be. So I'm guessing it was a moment that he'd lost, or he's just kind of like, he's just, you know, this kind of kid. But in any way, like, it, the black and white picture works very, very well. I thought in this setting, I think it's a beautiful photograph.
Yeah, I like it as a picture. It confused me and not in a good way. I couldn't figure out what was going on. If there had been, let's put it this way, if the exertion of the one that's my number two had been present here, this would have been my number one. But at first I thought it might have been like they were practicing and they were, you know, demonstrating how to do a certain hold. But then I saw the black kid's finger cutting into the white kid's arm. So it's obviously there's some exertion going on and it's not just a practice. But then, you know, and it, likewise, it would have worked if this was the moment that the match was over. If there had been anguish or a tear or something, pain, something like that. But that blank expression, didn't really work for me. It's not a bad picture. It's just... a hair off in a couple different directions.
I think it's just a really surreal moment. And I, you know, obviously in a sports like wrestling, you would see a lot more, you know, anger and frustration and being choked and not choked and trying to get out of a hole and things like that. Excuse me. But, yeah, this one just was just, I loved it. So, you know what? I think we'll go, I'm happy going with the mud thing for the face. Because we're in, and you should we bump the hockey to second then? Because I think we can't. And then I'm not crazy about the photo, Matt, the one you chosen, the Tom L one.
Okay.
But I gave you, you gave me last.
Well, I think that we should have co third place and make it a wrestling third place.
Oh, for these two? So it's the very first BLFS co-third place?
That's my thought.
All right. Well, it's not going to happen that often because I don't want to get used to like having two co-third places.
No, I think in general we should make strong choices, but I think that we were enough different on this that I don't really feel like shafting one or the other. So,
So the winner, Danny Zelk. You will be receiving a special gift from us, but not probably for another month. But in any case, you know, we'll let you know. Thank you for participating and participate again next month. Thank you.
You asked for it, you get it. Ryu and I will rip your photos into smithereens. Hold on to your headphones. Here comes the pain.
So, the shorter, you know, compact version. Now, it's not that we don't have time, but last time we went a bit overboard, and enough chit-chat, we're going to start. So, Bashar, first one, I know what he wants to do. I'm not too crazy about it because I think, I don't know what's actually in the focus foot, in this photo. Maybe the foot?
Which wouldn't be the end of the world. It's the... It's a good idea. The background is not helping. You can't have a panning shot like that with an erratic kind of background like that. It just doesn't work. So find a difference where the foreground is light and the background is dark, or there's just nothing and it's just... If this had just been an empty gym and those were the... You know, that was the stands, it would have been a better start. But this just doesn't work at all. But, you know, points for trying, because through trying... things like this is where your best pictures come from. So continue.
Right. And then I don't actually understand what the sport was wrestling. Until I actually had to think about wrestling. It for a bit. And that's probably wrestling, but it doesn't really do anything to me. Second one, I think is great. I don't understand why it should be here, but if you want our opinion, or at least my opinion, it's a great photo. I wish he was actually doing some other stroke.
Yeah. Because
it doesn't look very good in it.
That's the only problem.
You know? But,
and first of all, it, obviously... Ryu and I are both, this is good. This is a good picture. This is a good idea. This is the kind of picture that magazines and newspapers run all the time. Editors love this kind of picture. The fact that the arm and the swimsuit of the person in the foreground is laid out like that is, that's
great.
Very, very well done. Ironically, the weakest part of the picture is the focus of the picture, which is the swimmer. You got to, you know, try this again. There's nothing that's going to stop you from making this picture again. Things like this happen all the time. Try to get the face, try to get, you know, a backstroke going the other way, something else to make the focus of the picture as strong as the setup to the picture. So, good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Great, fantastic photo.
Yeah.
Almost there. Moving on. I don't mind the Pope John's Bronco picture thing. I mean, you know, it's kind of, you know, very average.
Yeah, well,
average, you know what I mean?
Here's the thing about this picture. There's a couple things that are going against him. First is that the ride is over because he has both of his hands on the rigging. I know this because... I shoot rodeo. So this isn't, he's not being scored here. It's not, he's not wrecking. So what you have is a ride that's over. and the horse isn't bucking. This horse is in a full gallop right here, which is just not going to make for as interesting a picture if the horse was, you know, hunched over or in the process of bucking or airborne. So you have a rider who's not doing what he's supposed to be doing, and you have a horse not doing what he's supposed to be doing. That said, I mean, you got the action, like you got what's happening right there, but you want to try for an actual bucking picture or a wreck, or, you know, something where the horse is doing something more interesting than galloping. Like, riders hate it and stock contractors hate it when the horse gallops, because the whole point of rodeo is for the horse to buck. So just try.
I've seen enough rodeo and these kind of photos, you know, now, and this is an average photo.
Yeah.
That's it. All right, move on. Carr, I don't really care much for these two photos. I know what he wants to do, but I understand it's very difficult to shoot motorsports because you're quite limited in terms of access and angles and things like that. But it doesn't necessarily have to be these kind of stock photos that anyone can take. And obviously we've been saying, Matt's been saying, and I've been saying for a long time, we're trying to make you think differently and try to shoot, you know, think in a different way of actually shooting sports. And this is kind of going against the grain. This is really standard photo. I mean, there's nothing to scream about, nothing to say, oh, it's terrible. Something to say, oh, it's great.
Yeah,
it's just
the first one is not exposed, and right? I'm guessing because of the headlights. And that's just going to be a boring picture all the way. The second one is closer. Mm. You know, there's an angle there. There's a Pirelli sign in the background. It's not bad. It's just, you know, it's just average. The thing about motorsports is that more and more the access is just going to be bad. And the best thing to do is try to get pit pictures, try to get garage pictures, try to get interesting pictures of the drivers looking at their cars grimly, yelling at their mechanics. You know, there's just so much more to motorsports than what's going on the track. And you're just so limited that the better pictures are going to come off the track. So, yeah, refocus. Yeah.
That's it. Okay, yeah, next.
This is, I get what he's saying about whatever separation and ISO, but the problem is that the problem isn't the exposure. The exposure is fine. This is plenty light enough to be shooting. The problem is that it's just not a picture. Like, the guy who's running with the ball is looking away, and there's, you know, there's too much going on in other parts of the picture for it to be really good. Plus, it's at too high of an angle. So kneel down, let the action come to you, make pictures when the action's coming to you, try to get the faces or try to get, you know, something else that makes it interesting. This picture, if you showed this picture to anybody, they, oh yeah, that's football. You know, that it's not, there's nothing good about it. And the fact that he's looking away makes it bad. Don't worry about the ISO. You obviously have enough. You don't need a flash for whatever field this is. Don't even bother with it. You know, just try to make more interesting pictures. Kneel down, don't stand up.
You kind of have to do extremes in these situations. Like, if I were him, I would have actually put the focusing cursor all the way to the right and actually had the guy carrying the ball towards the extreme edge. You don't want to do anything half-assed. It's probably the worst thing to do in photography, in sports photography, because you've got people who, you know, put their subject right in the middle. There's nothing interesting about that. And you can see, like, in our pictures or in pictures that won the competition, that people have actually really thought about the composition and how, you know, the picture is presented within the frame. So really think about that and don't make it so, you know, just, you know, think of something interesting to compose and think about it a lot before you get on the field and do it and just take mundane photos over and over and over. So yeah, that's your next thing. Kasem, hockey, slap shots.
Yeah,
not really interesting.
Shooting the action at the far end of the ice is just really difficult. A lot of times I won't even bother. If I happen to have a position that I can get the other end of the ice, usually it's too far away to really being able to tell what's going on exactly, and the boards are so close to the action that you're not going to be able to get any separation, and it's just going to look bad. concentrate on the action coming at you, or sit on the side and get it coming across. And then the other thing is that I looked at a bunch of pictures in this person's stream, and they all need to be better white balanced. You just look at the ice compared to the border, you know, the white page of Flickr, and you'll see how far off that is from actually being white. You got to do better than that.
Okay. It's a classic example of I'm very happy that I got a shot of a shot. And like Matt said, things that's happening on the other end. Same for basketball as well. It's very boring. Unless it's a game-winning or game-deciding moment. Like if you remember the Michael Jordan shot over Russell in, I don't know, 98 final. That was a really great shot because you can see it is the last shot of the game. And it's taken from the back and you can see everything going on at the same time. But this is not. It's not wide. It's just a shot that probably didn't even go in. There's no reaction. There's nothing. So really, let me think about it. Like, is that really interesting, or are you just happy you got a shot? If it's just the fact you just got a shot, then big deal. Everyone gets that, all right? So move on. Get something better. I like the Fletcher photo, the rugby one.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with it. I just, I think it's a little bit unlucky. If the guy had been jumping a little bit higher, you would have been able to see the face. But, you know,
I don't think he can jump that high. He's a big jump boy. That high.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you just get unlucky, but this is on the right course. I mean, obviously, Fletcher got low. This is a good example of timing, maybe not a great example. I don't know exactly, you know, if this was on his way up or on his way down, but it's at least on the ballpark. So I would continue along that. I think it might be a little bit underexposed, but that's a matter of taste.
I wish I could have seen the ball, you know, in this one. I like the whole, you know, in the air, because it's even better because he's a big guy, you know, and his in the air is quite funny. But the right arm not being there really bothers me. There's something just not right about it. I like the fact you actually, it's interesting, but maybe you can try differently.
It'll come. Like I Matt mean, said, you're in the ballpark. You understand the action. You understand the sport. Work on your timing. I can't. You know, it's impossible to know if this was just in the middle of a burst or something like that. But put your camera on single and try and pick the moment that you want, rather than just letting it run. I think that might be part of it here.
Okay. I'm gonna go the Aussie diver thing. Same. This is a half-ass thing. So do you want it? You gotta make it into an extreme. I mean, what am I supposed to concentrate on by looking at this photo? The three girls on them. It makes not doing anything interesting. Composition wise, it's the same. It's really half-assed. You got you should then maybe just take one girl and then focus her on the far left hand, and then you actually got the entire oar on the right. I mean, you know, don't just go all the way. There's nothing bad about risking it all, because it is about risking it all, and it's not trying to, you're not trying to sell all these photos to just three girls who were actually on the boat. I'm assuming that's not the case. And from this angle, you could have actually done the composition I just mentioned, and I don't understand why you didn't do
it. It's really weirdly composed, with the oars cut off on one side and one of the rowers cut off on the other side. And the girl who's in the middle doesn't really have much of an expression on her face, but the two on the side have better expressions. There's just really, this isn't coming together. So practice. Think about your framing while you're making the picture. The goal isn't get the action in the middle of the frame or get a person in the middle of the frame. Move it around, see what looks good, experiment. You never know. Like, you can't plan, this is the composition I want for this picture when you're in your house putting your gear there. But when you're out on the boat and you're shooting this, move the viewfinder, move the lens around, look through the viewfinder, see what you're seeing, and wait until you get something that makes sense, and that where all the parts to the picture are working together. It's not happening here. Try it again.
All right. Repeater. Defender 13. same thing. You know, it's happening on the, I know there is a fight. I understand that. And I know there's a goal, but you know what? It's a crappy photo. And, you know, we keep on saying it's not, you have to think about the fact that you want to get a good shot. And good shot in things like hockey and things like football, soccer, whatever. Things like basketball, if it's happening on the other side, it's very difficult to get a good shot of something. And I know it's very important if there's a goal, but you know what? You're unlucky. You weren't there.
Yeah, there's nothing you can do about it. You can try. You just have to accept that that one person, if whoever you're working for, or if this is your business or whatever, if it was really important to have every picture, you would have more than one person shooting it, and then you wouldn't have to shoot at the far end of the ice at all because somebody else would be doing it. But what we're looking at is it's not your job, or, you know, if it is, then whoever has sent you there has said, shoot the whole game. And that happens to me sometimes. I have to shoot the whole game. But it doesn't mean that the pictures that you get that are too far away or that you don't have a good angle on are going to be good pictures. And it doesn't, like, this picture is not going to run anywhere. Like, it doesn't matter that it's a goal and it's a celebration or it's a fight or whatever. It's just too far away. The second one, the focus is on the people who are outside of, you know, the fans. It's not, the focus is not on the fight. Like, the autofocus is on the fans. So that picture is not going anywhere. If you're working, you need to get pictures, but they're not going to run the pictures that are too far away. And if you're not working, you should really be trying to make the best pictures of you can of the things that are within your reach. And neither of these are. So I'm not saying don't shoot far away, but if you're going to, figure out a way to make it more of an interesting picture and better composition and, on the bottom one, better autofocusing.
Maybe you should even do a master class on things that's actually happening on the other end. No? We probably should. Yeah. All right. That's an idea. Ken, interesting. I like them both. Really, I like the second one, obviously, more than the first one.
In this really shiny gym floor on the...
Yep. But the head's cut off, though. That's the problem on that one. You know? The head's cut off. And if the head wasn't cut off, I think it would have been on the reflection picture.
Yeah,
you know,
I'm not especially worried about that.
You see at the end?
But the thing is that I don't like that picture anywhere near as much as I like the bottom one. Yeah, it's just such a
second's great. Normal, yeah.
You just don't see some and he went for it. Ken has been listening to everything that we've been saying. Every time he shows us pictures, he's incorporating something that we're saying, and guess what? He has gotten unbelievably better in the time that he's been submitting pictures to us.
We should show the stuff he sent us, like the beginning of the show, and compare to what he can do. I mean, it's the corners. I mean, the spacing
the corners of the stands, the line, where the ball is painted on the gym, and the bottoms of the banners, and it looks like a landscape of a basketball game. You know, and that doesn't, you know, you don't see that picture. And not only has he seen it and made the picture, but he nailed it. I mean, this is a good picture. So.
It's a great picture.
Listening to this,
show us your pictures
because we can make you better. Ken is the living embodiment of that, and we will. I think we should do. Yeah. We're gonna do this. I'm gonna get Ken's permission to show some of his older pictures, and then these, and you're gonna see the difference in his work. And
I love it. It really, really is like, it's, you know, I'm a bit sucker for like all these dead space and it's just great. I mean, there's nothing I can fault about this picture. It's a great, great shot.
Yeah.
Now we're going to go down a bit now. So, Steven,
it's great. You know, one of these might be, you know, your nephew or your kid or something like that. Even, but at the end of the day, the only face that you see is being cut off and it's not either one of the people who has the ball or is making the tackle. The background's bad. It's too high of an angle. Wait for the action to come to you and then make a picture out of it. This is not a picture and the action's going away from you. You just need to let these kind of pictures go. Just let it go. You're not going to get it like this.
And I think this is, you know, like probably like in New Zealand or whatever, where, you know, rugby is quite a popular sport. And in that case, you can probably sit on the end and not on the side, and like sit in the end and wait for the thing to happen, you know? Don't like premature like shutter release all over the place and think this is a great shot because you got the kid tackling a kid.
Yeah.
I can't even see the kid's face. There's nothing interesting happen. There's another kid in the background. That's really you know,
you're not making a movie.
Ruining the whole thing. It's just a crappy picture. You know,
you're making a picture of a moment, and I guarantee you, even if you can't sit on the ends, I guarantee you that at some point during this game, the action came at you. Make pictures of that. Concentrate on that. Don't show anybody these pictures except us. Like this picture was entered in the pool, and I said, you know, give it to us in training ground, and you know, thank you to Steven for doing that. But wait for the action, and don't put pictures like this, you know, and say this is an example of my work. Yeah, it's not.
It's crap.
You know, you need to wait for that action and make pictures out of it.
Franco. It's just too much happening, I think, in this photo. I like the fact that the guy's getting his nuts kicked in, but that's about it, you know?
And what we have here is an example of the race car going over the curb. You know, you have one part of the picture and the rest of it all fell away. I mean, the ball is being cut off, you know, the guy's fingers in the ball is being cut off at the expense of a kick in the nuts. And everybody likes a good kick in the nuts picture, but, you know, it still has to be a good picture otherwise, or else, you know, what are we really looking at here? So, no on that. You know, if this kind of stuff happens, then sit on it and, you know, try to frame it better. But if not, you know, concentrate on, you know, at least getting the ball when the guy's throwing it in the frame.
And I'm assuming, obviously, this is shot from the side because he's aiming at the goal. Yeah. I've just shot handball, and I shot, you know, top international level. So it's Norway against France. France is the defending Olympic champion. And I sat right next to the goal because A, I wanted to get a good shot, and B, if I get hit, whatever, I'm not going to die from it. So, you know, go there, get to the best angle where you can get the best shot. And obviously you haven't, I don't know, for access reason, or just because you weren't brave enough to actually go there, or you were just lazy. And you have to get where you can get the best shot. And this is obviously not the place. Unless you actually got, you know, you're shooting from a very, very low angle, that would have been really, really good. You know, you can see not a lot of opportunities to actually get low angles in a handball game. But, you know, you have to really think about those kind of things as well. It's funny.
This picture from the end, if he had been kneeling at the end line shooting this, would have been a good picture because you would have been able to get the ball, you would have been able to get the kick in the nuts and the face of the guy who was throwing it. So, you know, think about that.
The second one doesn't really do it for me either.
You know, the second one I think would have been more interesting in a lot of different ways. That obviously it was on some kind of auto setting because it made the sky 18% and it underexposed the hands and the ball. I would have liked to see just a different composition of this. Like, I'm okay with the blank background, but have the ball higher in the frame, you know, so there's not dead space as much on top of it as there is on the side. I would suggest sit on this. Like, if they do this a lot, sit on it and try some different things. If they do this once a game or twice a game or something like that, you have plenty of opportunities to try something here. Get the exposure right, get the framing and the composition right, work around, see if you can get a little bit of a background at the very bottom of it so that it kind of provides a little bit more of a frame. Try. Like, this is a moment where things happen. Try to make a better picture out of those things. It's very predictable. It's always going to happen in a game, whether it's once or twice or whatever. Sit on it. The last one, you can't have your main subject in the middle and then something you know, that's not in focus in front of it and on the side. This is bad composition. You know, wait till if you're trying to make an action picture of one of the teams, then make a clean action picture of that. If you're trying to show them in a group, then at least get it so that the focus point isn't distracting from the rest of the picture. You know, focus on what's near and let what's far fall off, or, you know, something else that makes it less awkward. This is awkward. The front of the front of the nearest bike is cut off. The helmet of the rider is cut off. This is bad composition.
Yeah, no, just bad overall. I know motorsports is difficult. I understand that, but I see way too many ones that just, you know, you're happy to actually get the person in focus, and great, you know, I'll give you a candy for that. But honestly, what are you showing us here? It's just a guy on a bike, another guy on a bike, and that's it. Not, I don't feel anything, you know. The worst probably is that if you show a photograph to someone, if they're indifferent, that's the worst. You have to kind of get kind of an excitement or sadness or whatever you actually get out of photos, and this doesn't do me anything. And I'm sure you show it to thousands of people, we'll probably say the same thing, whatever. And on top of that, it's crappy because, you know, it's got this guy covering the front of the bike, and yeah, not good.
Yeah, try for a different angle. Wait till they go into a corner. You know, if somebody's trying to pass them low in the corner or something like that, there might be a little bit of contact, and you can get, like, this is an interesting thing. Like, people don't ordinarily, I don't even know what sport this is. This is like some kind of motorcycle racing with a sidecar or something. I don't see pictures of this very often. So you already have a head start towards making something that people will look at because they don't know what it is, you know? So be in a corner where they're coming more at you so that you can see them side by side, or, you know, jockeying for position, or, you know, maybe one of the guys in the sidecar is like trying to pull a little funny business, you know, try to get that, you know, rather than basically you've turned something that looks interesting into something that looks not interesting because you're shooting them from the side and you have no idea where they're going from here. There's no depth to it.
Okay.
You know, stand
okay.
somewhere different.
Matt, okay. I got it.
That was rude.
That's 26 minutes. Okay. We're a bit better now. Right. Thank you for entering to Training Ground. And Matt will keep on, or I will keep on recruiting you from our pool into this. And don't feel shame. I mean, we're going to rip you and we're going to, you know, talk crap about your photos, but honestly, we will make you better. You listen to us, we'll make you better, because plenty of people definitely don't listen to us, and you can see the results, because over and over and over we see the same thing over and over and over. So listen to us, we'll make you the toast of the town of sports photography. This month in Angry Matt, we take you to a very angry place. And here is Angry Matt.
Yeah, I'm even more angry than normal, I think, this month. My three... It's possible.
Is that possible?
Yeah, because this kind of... this, I'm angry about the outcome for ego reasons, and I'm angry about it for convenience reasons, and I'm angry about it for justice reasons. So, yeah, it's a perfect storm of Angry Matt.
Justice reasons.
So, my three-year-long quest to get a photographer's card for the PRCA rodeos came to an end last week when I was officially denied a card. This year I had some very heavy hitters go to bat for me: stock contractors, rodeo committees, PR people, cowboys, you know, singing my praises, how they like my pictures and how professional and competent I am. I sent along my clippings, including a picture of the year on Sports Illustrated this year, and I was denied by the person that gives out the cards. No real reason given, just I'm not enough of a cowboy. I don't know, haven't been doing long enough. But basically, the PRCA is saying that they enjoyed my coverage and they like the places where it runs, where no rodeo pictures run. They like the fact that more people have seen my rodeo pictures over the last year than all other rodeo photographers combined. They like all that stuff, but because I'm not really a cowboy, they're not going to do anything to make it easier for me to get into rodeos, which means that if I want to shoot as many rodeos as I can, it means I have to do a lot of work to get credentialed to call each individual committee and explain who I am and show them my clips and my portfolio and what I'm doing with them and where they're going to run, rather than the PRCA just saying, oh yeah, he's doing great things for our sport, his pictures are really good, and our pictures never run anywhere other than our own publications, so we're going to give him this little piece of plastic that means that he can go to any rodeo and shoot it that he wants. And that's all a matter of convenience, but what the car really would allow me to do is go on the road. I was in talks with a couple cowboys who were very receptive to the idea of me following them around for a couple weeks this summer and just going to whatever rodeos they go to. And what people don't understand about rodeos is if a cowboy enters a rodeo and doesn't like the horse that he's drawn or the bull that he's drawn, he'll just not go to that one and go to a different one where he has a better draw. And for me to go on the road for 2 weeks would mean that I would have to apply to shoot maybe three times as many rodeos as I could shoot, because I would have to be prepared for them not to go to one rodeo and to go to another one. And it's just not feasible to apply for all those credentials and then not go, because then I wouldn't be able to go next year. So the PRCA basically is, you know, screwing me from being able to do what I really want to do, which is not just the action pictures, not just the behind the shoots pictures, but the life of a cowboy on the road. And they're standing in the way of doing that, and it's bullshit. And that is Angry Matt.
And with that, we end the 12th episode of Big Lens Fast Shutter. Thanks to Boutsman for his great iPhone. And not Matt Cohen, but David Whitaker for producing our show. Really, honestly, cannot do this without them. To check out their info, as well as ours, please check out biglensfastshutter.com. See you next month.